Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, June 1st, 2017. It is 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for our County Administrative Workshop. We have item number one, which is legal, and resolution to 2017-028 in the matter of granting vacation of portion of Dog Creek Road at public right-of-way. So whoever's good in that, come on forward.
I didn't realize it said legal.
What's that?
Are these new chairs?
New-ish. I don't know where they came
They're new
from.
To us. They're new to you. They're temporary. I don't think they're conducive for all of our staff. It may not be. But they're good for now. So, we had talked about this, and there's some information provided from a neighbor in the record here. So, you want to lead us through this?
Sure. Mr. Kelton called me after he received the notice, and he was curious as to what was going on, and I explained to him that this is a vacation request of Mr. West to be totally confined within his own property boundaries. This gentleman's concern was that his property would somehow be impacted. I assured him that all work we're requesting of Mr. West is to take place on his parcel and not any neighboring parcels, so these cul-de-sac turnarounds will be constructed on Mr. West's parcels with gates on his parcels, and this gentleman was fine with that. He did make these suggestions to put up signs. He doesn't want, his parcel is currently vacant, but he didn't want people going up in there and having to turn around in his property.
So something that came to mind, I'm reviewing the Community Wildfire Protection Plan, and we have a need, there's a even within our own transit plans for developments, we want to try to provide alternative exits or exit strategies in the event of a fire. Is this going to preclude a development at some point in the future from having access? Is this an alternative route? Because I think there's another route to use on this, but this wouldn't be an alternative route anymore if we were to vacate this.
That would be correct. This road would be
kind of. And I'm just wondering whether or not that had been considered.
I don't remember considering this in terms of a wildfire exit. I suppose this is a good point. There are other exits. The only people this would impact, though, again, would be Mr. West, I would think.
I'd need to take a look at the map and see who is being, you know, required to go around the alternative route. I don't have a great, in my mind, I don't know exactly where this is. So I'd need a better, I think the map that was provided is not really illustrative of the area.
Not of the entire area, you're right.
And so that's what I would need to kind of see. So
the people who...
Can you bring, you're the, online, right?
I'm online.
Do you mind bringing that up? Does that make sense? Because I think I'm totally in favor of this for every other so far, but that just came to me as I'd like to look at the zoning of the other of the parcels around and see if there isn't any developable parcels in that area that would make sense that we'd need to consider before we vacate this.
Would GIS or Google Maps is your preference?
Google Maps.
Okay.
Do you have the overlay? And that's really slow. That takes a lot of bandwidth. But that'll be required to look at the zoning around. I think that's an important consideration that we take into account in the future, the development of properties around that area and the need for alternative exits in the event of a fire situation.
I can tell you that people who live east of here, well, you know, if there's a fire to their east, they're going to need somewhere to go. I understand what you're saying.
Okay. I'm sorry to bring up this wrinkle, but I really just, it brought to mind when I was reading the CWPP yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Is there an address that we're looking at?
Was it 1600?
1600 is one of the
Dog
parcel
Creek,
numbers.
I think that'll get you close. Is that one of West's?
That's in that tax lot.
Yep. I have four addresses I can give you here, all on Dog Creek Road, 105, 182, 188.
Well, I mean, I have Dog Creek up just so that we can see the whole thing.
188 is probably any one of those. Is there an urgency to Mr. West's request?
You know, I'm going to say no, because when you say the word urgency, I think of people who are calling in once a week, once a month. Where are we? Where are we? And I'm not getting that from Mr. West.
It's just a long-term desire of his to see this not be one of those thoroughfares that is being kind of negatively impacting his...
It's negatively impacting...
livability style.
Yes.
Come on up, Mr. Ferguson.
I think we can put a map together, and we can work with Bob Noyes with GIS. Or I could try to do it in AutoCAD and kind of show the different
zones. Real quick, nothing.
And
yeah, and
but I think that would be an important graphic to
I see. Think so. I think that's a consideration I haven't really made when we're doing these vacations. I think we've just been doing street plugs mostly, not actual vacations of roads. But I think that's a consideration that we need to take into effect of what is going to be needed potentially in 20 years from now. With access for fire.
You wanted I have GIS and maps, so...
Just as a quick one.
That's GIS. If you switch over to Chrome, it's the Google Maps.
Yeah, I think the zoning one is going to be important, and there is... Leland. But if you wouldn't mind, I think that would be helpful. That does look like they're...
Is that like the old Puma that you're looking at?
It's just Google. Pretty much.
Yeah, this was GIS, and it's old. I don't know what it is. It was just a link that I had before for GIS.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, we can pull a map together.
Okay. Was there anything else that we needed to do on this, or you were really, expecting to bring it back and have it being moved forward? I see that there's an order, a resolution.
Right. I mean, it's up to you, obviously. The only time, there is no actual public hearing.
Okay.
Although people, because it's not one required. I don't know if you remember, we did want, I think the board did ask to let people know that lived in that vicinity.
Yeah,
I think
you guys...
So we did give them, Public Works sent out notices to those folks that you were going to meet on the 7th to discuss it. I mean, that is what it is. It's not a required public hearing.
Okay.
So if you did meet on the 7th and brought it up and said we're not ready to move forward, then...
I still hate to have people drive all that way to not have it. I mean, is it possible to have the maps and everything in place by the 7th?
Oh, I don't know. That's...
I'd have to talk to Bob, Mr. Noyes. Noyes. How do you say his last name?
Yeah, that's how I say it.
I mean, he can produce a easier-to-read map than I can produce. Mine's kind of more based off...
Well, it's not hard for me to just get on the GIS and look at the overlays and stuff, so I don't know that you'd even need to spend time doing that. I need to spend some time. Do you have access to that same software? It's the Google Earth with the assessor's overlay.
I don't. I will ask Bob to send me that link.
Yeah.
So.
But that doesn't show the zoning for you.
It does.
Okay.
It does. I can go on there and see the zoning.
Well, you have to click on each one though, and it pops up.
I don't mind.
And that's where the zoning is listed.
Because we could do all the parcels with a different color and a legend for the different zonings.
Yeah, I don't want you to spend too much time on this. Actually, if we were trying to illustrate, if I see that there's a need for me to not move forward with this because of that, we are going to have to produce that map to illustrate these are developable properties, increasing density in that area because of the potential zoning. And as a result, we're going to need to keep that thoroughfare open as an alternative fire route, for instance. If we get to that point, I'm having to say, if I'm having to recommend to the board no, then we'll probably have to do that now. But let's not do it before I take a look. If they're clearly resource zone properties and it's fully developed out and the density isn't that great, I can be assured that we'll be okay. So,
I did receive one phone call from a lady who lives to his east. And her question was, what is he doing? And I explained the vacation process and how it's all on his property. And she said, if that's all he's doing, then I'm not concerned. And I said, ma'am, if you want something in the record, please get it in writing to me. She said, no, I'm not going to bother.
Okay. That's great.
And those are the only two people I heard from.
I'm not sure that people would have been taking into consideration that issue of fire. That was probably something, the only one that I could come up with as a reasonable reason why we wouldn't want to move forward. But otherwise, I'm totally in favor at this point. I just need to do my diligence and check it out. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else for legal? Commissioner Morgan?
I do have, I don't know if now is the time. I did submit to legal last night and had them review and give back for the district attorney's letters.
Oh, great.
So I was going to bring that up under other business at the bottom, but just because legal reviewed it for me last night, I just...
Are you consulting on that?
She corrected my typos.
She's really good at that. That's where I go.
I didn't use the red pen, but...
Okay,
yeah,
well, as long as
she's...
It's
yeah.
good. Okay. We can do it under matters. Thank okay. you so much.
So, guys, you are putting this on.
Yeah, we'll move it forward.
You, even if you decide not to
yep.
sign it.
Yep.
Okay, great.
I think we should move it forward to the 7th, which is another admin. It's not going to the WBS yet.
The 7th is WBS.
Yes.
It is?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. I sure wish Dan was here. Well, we can always take it off.
Yeah, my only thing is, and like I say, it's not an official public hearing. The only difference would be that we told people it was going to be on that day.
We should
day.
Put it on.
Yeah, even
we
if,
should put even it on,
if
even
you decide
if we're
not,
not
to
it.
Go
okay.
for it.
If we're meeting this afternoon, could we table it till this afternoon?
I think we're going to put it on the 7th regardless.
Okay.
So let's
yeah.
just do that,
okay.
and we can talk about it at any time between now and then.
Sure.
That sounds good.
Okay.
We'll get it done.
All right.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, guys. I will. Yeah. Or Dan. We'll cover it.
Do they need to be there?
I don't know. That'll be up to Dan. We'll let you know before the 7th.
Thank you.
Right now, no.
Okay.
If you hear from us, but right now, no.
Got it.
Okay. Thanks. Transit Department Business. Item number 2A, agreement number 3214194 between Josephine County and Department of Rail and Transportation, Rail and Public Transit Division.
Are we getting light rail?
It's interesting to put rail in there. I had to read all the way through to the end to figure out, no, of course Scott's on this and we don't do rail. And I was thinking maybe it was some like crossings or whatever, but
no, they just pulled the rail division into public transit.
Okay.
So it's ODOT Highway and Roads and then rail transit. Don't know why.
Got to stick it somewhere.
Don't question ODOT. this is, I think we probably have one more agreement coming.
Okay.
So this is a 5310 agreement, which is funds that come from the Federal Transit Administration to ODOT and then get distributed to the individual providers by formula. So this is part of our formula. And so the 5310 funds by origin are designated for elderly and disabled transportation projects.
Mm.
So since we provide public transit, we use these funds for our preventive maintenance. So anything that, such as oil changes, tire changes, batteries, starters, any maintenance that's involved that keeps the vehicles up and running and in good condition is an eligible expense. So this is a two-year agreement. It provides a little over $81,000. For that program, there's about a $9,300 local match. So it's in combination, it's providing about almost $91,000 for our preventive maintenance.
Hmm.
Our maintenance cost is over $200,000 a year. So this is roughly covering about half.
Yeah.
There is additional money that will be coming in. It's part of the same program. Now, why they split it up into two different pots, I'm not quite sure. But that'll be probably the next agreement that comes forward.
Okay.
So it's for all of our vehicles, not just the fixed route. So it's the fixed route, the dialer rate, everything that we do. So it all gets lumped in. It also includes, just FYI, even the expense to clean our vehicles is considered preventive maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of this program as well.
How's that new agreement working out?
It's working out.
Good.
I have some issues in how the buses get cleaned themselves and some of that quality, but it's something that we're working through.
Sure. Expectations.
Yeah. And it's scheduling fun.
Yeah.
So it's make sure the vehicles come in and out of service correctly and at the right time. So it's complicated. But yeah, I'm happy with it. It's just want to make sure the quality is there.
Okay.
Do we do this in-house or do we hire a contract out for the service?
I contract out for the service, and just to give you an idea, I think it's around $30,000 maybe a year, and the vehicles
we
are getting washed.
We just amended that agreement a couple of months ago because the original agreement was for smaller.
It's for smaller vehicles,
and
we added in some bigger ones. And it's a private contractor that we go out for bid. He was the last one that actually came in with a bid. And so they get washed just kind of FYI about 2 to 3 times a week on average, just depending on the need.
They'll look better than my car does right now after going to bending back. So.
Yeah. It's one of those just personal pet peeves of mine that, you know, hey, it's a public vehicle. You need to keep it clean and respectable. So, but that's not all that this money goes to. It's just a portion of it.
No, absolutely.
No, I agree, because it gives an appearance of, is it safe for people to ride? Is it this something that is a...
Well, we're taking care of public property. It's not ours.
Right, right.
It's their asset. And when we, you know, don't have a good outside image, what are you doing on the inside?
Or that's exactly right.
The person who's driving it and the expectation of those riders. I think it's the broken window kind of syndrome. If it's dirty on the outside, they don't respect the inside as much when they're riders. So it's a full package kind of a deal. So I completely agree. It's an investment well spent.
So like I said, this is I think I have one more. I can't remember. I've gotten lost in how many agreements I've brought forward, but there should be one more 5310 that we just put it all into the same pot and go for it.
Are they continuations or new agreements?
They're new agreements. Okay. We get one every 2 years. It's the same agreement. We use it for the same thing, but it's just it's a new one that comes from ODOT.
I don't mind talking, having Dan speak to it, and or we can help him out. I can do it
on Wednesday.
Yeah. So
okay,
we'll move this forward. It's probably either way, but we'll put it on as an admin item. If that's okay. Take a look at the calendar and see what the schedule looks like. But I don't think you need to be there for it.
If I do need to be there, I'm available.
Okay.
So just let me know.
Yeah, we will.
Okay.
Right now, no. If Dan gives you a call and says yes, please,
okay,
that'd be great. So, thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you.
Did you have any additional services during the Boatneck weekend, or sometimes you provide auxiliary types of?
We
I appreciate you bringing that up. It was a conversation I had over the weekend and forgot about.
That's a good point. And in the past, it had been done, but since I've was hired way back. I discontinued it, and the reason is because there's charter service requirements that we're not supposed to compete with private business. So if there's a private business that's eligible or available to provide some sort of extra service for the Boatneck, they're supposed to do it. We're not supposed to compete with them. There's a lot of requirements and laws, legal requirements and laws that
especially
prevent us
changing
from doing
your system.
That's exactly
that.
If you were that's
to
the, one of the
have
keys.
It to continued, you couldn't be construed as competing. It's the normal service that you always provide.
Correct.
But doing in addition to, I kind of felt that would be.
That is. It's the same reason that we couldn't provide special service for the fair, the county fair. We do provide an extra stop at the front and on the side, but we can't do anything that's new, other than what our normal course of service is, because then we're construed as competing against those private interests. With that said, I do
are
some...
Are there any private interests that could handle that locally?
Laidlaw,
oh.
First Student. Not that they would. They're prohibitively expensive, and I think they price themselves out of the market, but those are the ones. With that said, I do some charter-type services for the city of Grants Pass.
Right.
I do like a public works tour for their budget committee. I've done several things for this county as well. As long as it fits into some certain criteria and I'm not charging for it, then I'm allowed to do it. But with that said,
it seems like you would be required to charge for it, because the alternative to do that would be to charge. It's like, what do we do? I don't know. Maybe our parks, like our RV spots. We need to charge a competitive rate from a standpoint that we're not undermining the private sector. We're competing just like them, and they chose us. They could have chose you.
Yeah, that's one of those key kind of things that we use to to not get around the charter agreement, but to make sure that we're not violating it. Yeah. So that's why it's easy for me not to charge at all.
Okay.
But with that said, going back to the boat, Nick, we did put, and this is kind of getting off on the edge, but we did put two buses and register them as an event or a float, and apparently it was well received. I wasn't here.
Okay.
But the people that were in it were very excited, and there was a lot of community support.
So. I like that. Last question had to do with you were putting in like a electronic tracking on your bus routes so that you can get in real-time understanding of where your buses are. Has that been done? Not yet.
It's still ongoing.
Was that a project for the fall?
It's a project that's been ongoing for about a year now.
Yeah.
And it's just working my way through the technology has been difficult.
Right.
Tedious, to say the least.
And then how do you make that available to, like, online?
That's part of the easy part. It's just it's finding the vendor and what they offer, because not everyone offers everything that I want in one package.
Mm.
So that's part of the problem.
Okay.
But we are definitely still moving forward.
Yeah, I think that would be really interesting in reducing the amount of calls that come in. Where's the bus? Is it here? Oh, it's in 2 minutes. You know,
that's
had
exactly
you
right.
Just logged in, if you would have known, that would have been great. Cool. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I need 30 seconds.
Sure. Public health, you're next if you want to come on up. How are you doing?
I'm good, Simon.
Good. How did your event go this weekend? You were speaking at the cemetery? Hillcrest. How did that go?
It went well.
Good.
I left a copy of my speech, one for each of the commissioners, when I came in this morning.
Okay, great.
I was more emotional in the delivery of it than I thought I would when I wrote
it.
Yeah,
I can imagine.
But I got some positive feedback.
Great, great. Well, glad you did
that. It relates to the audience, though. That's not a bad thing sometimes.
You do a lot of community stuff that goes unnoticed, and I just want to say thank you for, you know, above and beyond really the call of duty, just as being like a big part of this community. So thanks.
Well, it was an honor to get asked.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I've done anything like that.
Yeah.
But they do just such a nice job.
Yeah.
And a good turnout. And, you know, we've got fewer than 10 World War II veterans left in the community.
Yeah.
But just to be in that group and listen to their stories was
pretty
just
neat.
Really inspiring.
Yeah.
So
great. Public health. It seems like you were just here.
Well,
maybe it always.
I'm supposed to
that.
Do a quarterly update.
Okay. Yeah.
So, the first thing is good news. The funding for our Healthcare Coalition of Southern Oregon Healthy Start Grant is increasing by $44,800.
Wow.
In year four of execution, that is a performance-based adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare Coalition of Southern Oregon looked at who was really performing the bulk of that federal grant, and the money last year was split between Siskiyou Community Health Center and the Public Health Department.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we've added Douglas County for a little piece, but we're still doing 70% of the work, so they adjusted the funding formula for that. So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
On May 11th, the Environmental Health Division, in partnership with District 7 Food Services Corporation of Parkside Elementary School, launched its first ever one-of-a-kind food recycling pilot program.
Mm.
So what this looks like is, and the kids at Parkdale are kind of come up with a name for it. So when they get their lunches, they also get a to-go box. So whatever they don't eat gets then safely refrigerated, and they get to take it home.
Wow.
So instead of that food going into the trash, it's going into kids' tummies.
Do they have, I know that like in airports and stuff, there's like a food recycling, different outlets. You can put your paper products somewhere, and then there's the food products that can go, and they are composted. I don't know if...
Our schools aren't doing that right now, as far as what I've seen.
SOS has talked about that, haven't they, Rob?
Say again. Sorry.
The composting project, food composting project.
One school, I think, tried as a pilot. It's just tough getting folks to separate the dairy and animal-based stuff because that can't be composted, obviously.
Okay.
I want to say one school tried it as a pilot for maybe a couple, 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the issues our schools are having, since 100% of our schools are on the free lunch program, There's some kids that will still bring a lunch from home and just want a milk. The school will have them buy a full lunch to get the milk for free, because if they don't take the full lunch, they have to buy the milk. So in order to get it free, they have to take the full lunch. So that full lunch just gets thrown out. And so the amount of food that is getting thrown out in our schools is incredible.
Yeah.
And not to mention, you know, we've talked with the 4-H Extension about doing, trying to get farm to schools locally, but they say none of our local farms can produce enough to meet. But when I was a kid here, we had cooks in the schools that actually cooked meals, and we'd have food. If you look at what they're serving now, it's all frozen, reheated foods.
Is it?
And they'll have some salad trays or salad bars and stuff like that. But it's not the kind of smaller schools can do more with the farm to schools than what we're seeing in our local schools, and which in turn means lower health because it's the high processed foods.
That's right.
So I like the idea of doing something like this, and it would be great to continue to be looking towards how to get more from the farm to the schools going.
Yeah, absolutely. So just in the first week, we don't have a way to really track the data, but in the first week, they had 21 out of 65 kids participating, and they recycled about 5 to 10 pounds of food a day. So in 1 week of operations, they were estimating we saved over 25 to 50 pounds of food.
That'll grow, I'm sure, over time.
We are planning. It took over a year of the planning group to figure this process out, and they're hoping to expand next school year. They're growing the program slowly, and I'm encouraging them to pull together a grant request to move forward to the Community Advisory Council for All Care Health. And I've got more detail in your package on some of the projects that they've been funding. I chair that group that we've been funding in our community.
Does this mean the schools are having to buy more refrigeration for the kids to have access, and therefore there's a greater expense? Is that where the partnership with the grant is coming in?
Yes, they're going to need money to buy the refrigerators for the classrooms. And so that's
so they're going in each individual classroom?
Correct.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
So, again, we're growing the programs very slowly because we need to make sure we do this right and safely.
Okay.
So just to let you know, Chloe has asked, they have a formal mentor program, and I agreed to mentor the administrators from Coos and Curry County. We've only had one conference call on that, so I'm not really quite clear what all that's going to entail. And then finally, I've signed up to do a one-year optimization project with the All Care Health eServices Division. What they do is they come in and they follow a client from the time they check in to the window all the way through the process of receiving services.
Mm-hmm.
They look at the back billing end and coding. And so the first enclosure in your package, you know, what is the optimization plan? What does it entail? Just to give you some background on that.
Great.
Okay.
I know that's been a struggle probably since you've been here, the coding and the billing and the way the state operates is just a little challenging for us.
Well, and, you know, things don't match up. Mm-hmm. Even now, it's June. I've got a contract with All Care Health that's going to expire at the end of June, but I don't anticipate having my biennial contract with Oregon Health Authority until mid-July.
If we're lucky, the way the state's
exactly
going
right
now.
With
it's,
the budget.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, and it's sounding like a lot of the cuts to the state that they're threatening are in the health services industry. I was speaking to a medical surgeon's family in Prineville, and they work for the hospital. So they're all just waiting because everybody's on the verge of what cuts are coming from the state and what's that looking like. So.
Sure. So the next thing I wanted to share with you is this is a high-level map of our strategies and what the two CCOs in town are, what we consider the big rocks that we're focusing on. So the two community advisory councils, one for primary health and the one for All Care Health, when they develop their strategies on projects in town, they focus on these three big rocks. And what is attached to that, these are the projects that the All Care Health CAC has funded. We've got $19,650 left in that particular account. We just approved a small grant for Habitat for Humanity. big on Raptor Creek Farms. So this, the Community Advisory Council is made up 51% of community members for the two CCOs. Commissioner Morgan was at an orientation for the Primary Health Community Advisory Council. So she has a good understanding about, you know, what the role of that group is. So in July, we'll get another budget. And this is an opportunity for community members to come forward to us with requests for helping them get going with small projects.
Now, you're involved with both CCOs, mm-hmm. And a good partnership there. With both of them being sponsors of the Blue Zone project coming mm-hmm. in, is that something that they're incorporating you into as well, as far as, has that been on your radar yet?
Blue Zone is very much on my radar.
Okay.
I've been participating in the meetings that they've had over at Asante.
Okay.
So I think it's really a great opportunity to bring something into our community. It is going to really, I think, help economic development to have policies and in place and things that will help people live healthier lifestyles.
I've been in communication with commissioners from, Klamath. What's the Dalles? Well, yes, as far as Klamath as well, but so Douglas County, Wasco County, and Josephine County were mm-hmm. the next three kind of sites. So the commissioners are all kind of meeting and emailing about what our participation is. And,
oh, cool.
And so it's neat because it just fits right in line with all of this as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
it does.
And just some of the successes and some of the things that we can learn from Klamath, what they've gone through already and some of those things. But it's kind of neat because it does seem like it's right up your alley. So mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear you're on board with that.
Yeah, I am. The next, I don't have an update for 2016, one's not ready yet, but I wanted to let you know how much money, what's the economic contribution that All Care Health makes in our community in terms of dollars being pushed around and how many people they employ and all that kind of stuff. They have a contractor that pulled that together. And the very last thing in your package, I know Simon is very interested in change management,
mm-hmm.
is... you know, change management is how do you organize your work, and they talk about using SMART goals. And so this is just a little thing I found on the internet about doing SMART goals, and I'm trying to organize myself a little better with my department. And, you know, you guys ask us to come every year and give us our goals, and they just kind of hang out there, but mm-hmm. I'm not entirely satisfied with my response to that part of your process. And so I've been thinking about how to do that better.
I'm not so sure I am as well. I mean, not yours, me. And we've been working on trying to put it down on paper what's kind of floating around in the ether in my mind and probably Arthur's mind and some others. We don't have it delineated anywhere, and that's really a shortcoming, I think, of this board and the ability to kind of carry the torch going forward about what are the projects that are ongoing and the vision. And so... That was my question here, but not to preempt the liaison to your department. Do you have anything?
Well, one thing I want to point out as well is, and it's not on your report, but you emailed me about internally your eval on WIC, and I just wanted to say kudos and that you're just looking at efficiencies within mm-hmm. things, and I think that's great. And so taking advantage of someone who's got expertise from another county that's there, that's able to kind of make suggestions, and as you move forward to getting the new supervisor in place, mm-hmm. that those recommendations can be in place of ways of improvement, and I just want to recognize that's great. So, well done.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Legislative update, do you have anything that's going on potentially in Salem right now that we need to be aware of?
No. When I get the legislative updates, they're still talking about public health modernization.
Okay.
One of the subcommittees that I signed up for with the governor's board is the finance and incentives subcommittee, so that if the governor's budget has any money out there for public health modernization, I'll understand how Josephine County's funding formula, how that is. And mm-hmm. so I took a page out of your book, Simon, and said, if I'm not at the table, I might be on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to be able to understand that formula.
Good.
And, you know, if we have to put policy in place or procedures to adjust to whatever it ends up being, then we're in a position to do that.
Okay.
I know one of the topics that...
So I didn't really answer your question. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I think you did.
Okay.
You're following it.
One of the other bills is basically social consumption of marijuana.
Okay.
That is coming up that it might be worth the health board looking at, because I know the tobacco, you know, the request for the county to go tobacco free is something that was important to the department and the board.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll get you the number.
That'd be great.
And right now there's opportunity to give feedback on that.
Okay.
Because the move, according to the legislator this morning, was that potentially they're going to put it towards the counties to make the policy recommendations. And
okay.
So I'll get you the bill so that you guys can read up on it to make sure
that would
that
be helpful. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Oh, I did have two other things, and I wrote them down. I apologize.
Okay. No.
Animal control.
Sorry.
Vision for projects as a result of your levy passing. So we need to take a look at facility-wise. That's where I'm interested in. What are you looking to try to accomplish in the next 5 years with this revenue stream? And so that Ryan can kind of put it in, that we can all put it in the queue of like, because that the facility is in desperate need of attention. You've made great progress with the CAT facility, but there are others, and having a five-year plan and vision for facilities would be something, not tomorrow, but eventually, that we could kind of lean into as a county. And the other one is...
Let me answer your question.
Yep.
Because we're already there.
Okay.
If you look at the budget submission, there is $26,000 next year set aside to do an assessment of that property to determine what our need is for a new animal shelter.
Okay.
And then as part of a capital improvement plan, so we need to get the assessment done, find out what the requirement is, and then in year two, there's money set aside potentially for a new shelter.
Okay.
What I need from the community, because the 8 cents per thousand was supposed to be the right number to run the shelter. I don't want someone to say, you're using that money to do anything but what the voters said.
Right.
And so I want to be very thoughtful as we move forward on getting a new shelter and be really transparent with the public.
No, I think that's really important that we not take it for something else. But running is, you know, looking at your infrastructure, meeting the needs, keeping up with the times, like the fairgrounds, parks, and everywhere else.
Sure.
It's a cost of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see that as too far out. Building a new facility may not be part of that, but paying into, you know, your full rate of BOM is going to be a big step in that direction. So,
and Ryan knows.
Okay.
I gave him a heads up before I submitted my budget.
Also evaluating that is the appropriate location for your facility long term.
Mm-hmm.
There's other properties that may be available to suit that need. So. We need to look at that strategically as well.
Absolutely.
I don't want to stop you because you said you had two.
I have one more, relocation, and that needs to be scheduled for an update for an executive session about your facility and your our letter of intent to relocate.
Okay. I can put it in a next update, but I just want to remind the board that I recuse myself from the negotiation process for that, because I'm on All Care Health Board of Directors.
Not so much just the negotiating element.
Okay.
We'll have Mike and the board do that about your process for doing that, because you are going to be the director. You are the director of that, and so you're going to need to weigh in policy-wise on when and time and how and all that stuff. So we need to hear from you on that issue.
And you and I are meeting week after next.
On the 14th.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll have a chance to kind of get up to speed on all of that and kind of get
that
a game plan before we get that going too.
Right. So that was something that at Commissioner Young's suggestion, I'm on Lily's calendar once a month to review projects and just make sure that she and I are in alignment with the work of the department.
Okay. That's good.
So thanks for taking the initiative on that.
No problem.
I've been in and out. So.
No problem.
Excellent. Thank you, Diane.
Okay.
Mr. Gatteran.
Hello, commissioners.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me here.
have a couple of handouts.
I know if the Josephine County or department head is allowed to have a non-Josephine County business cup at the table, though. So. I'm outnumbered.
He can stay all day long.
All right.
These are the rules.
Thanks, Nate. Do you have a second?
I do.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll want to make sure to leave one for Commissioner Dion.
Oh, thank you.
I like a real coffee.
I'm a tea drinker. I'm just teasing. I just...
If it pleases the Board of County Commissioners, I'd like to start on the first page with under field services. Should be reflected that these numbers were ran, I want to say May 24th, so there's about a week that we don't have the numbers. But our snapshot population for field services, we have just slightly more than we did last quarter at 982 people, just under 1,000 folks that we're in charge of. You can see some of the other numbers there in terms of the face-to-face interviews. One thing that we should reflect here on this report is that some of the face-to-face interviews have increased in duration because we're focusing more on LSCMIs and OMS, which is the offender management system. It requires more in-depth conversations, and so some of those interviews last a little bit longer, which may explain the reduction, although slight.
Less frequent, but longer duration.
That's correct, yeah. Home visits were down slightly. I haven't drilled down into the reasons why, but I would suspect that if you recall last quarter, what we did was we moved some of the medium risk folks to the reduced supervision unit, which was 15 and less on the LSCMI, level of service case management inventory, which is the evidence-based risk assessment tool that we use. Arrests and sanctions went up slightly to 291. Other contacts that we had went up a little bit as well in terms of the phone contacts, email contacts, etc. And other collateral contacts, which is non-offender based, could be anybody, could be mom, dad, sister, brother, victims, and so on and so forth. That went up by over 1,000 different contacts in the last quarter. Some of the significant division notes for field services, we're participating in an annual statewide inter-rater reliability test. It kind of gives us an idea of how we're doing in terms of accuracy as it compares to the state. The report should be available today. I'm going to be on a Skype conference call regarding the outcomes of that and how we did as a county as compared to the rest of the state. We had a PO graduate within the last quarter. PO Jesse Meinertz is now on board, and he's got a full-time caseload now going through field training, and he's doing great. So we're really happy to have Jesse Meinertz as a PO in our division. We've been expanding our training in-house on OMS and behavior case plan. We received some feedback that we weren't getting enough hands-on training, and so we really devoted a lot of energy into OMS and behavior case planning. And a lot of it is individual consultation and coaching and so on and so forth, and so we've seen some increases and gains there. We started a group intake to increase our efficiency. Instead of having individual folks scheduled throughout the office, we're doing a group intake, and we're screening out the lower risk folks going right directly into the reduced supervision unit, and then identifying the high risk folks right out of the gate, and then assigning them to a regular caseload for ongoing supervision. We provided some consultation to DPSST, including our risk frequency matrix for consideration of using the philosophy to train others statewide. And this is the risk frequency matrix. I know Lily's familiar with it. But basically, if we have a high frequency, low risk type of situation, it doesn't require a lot of ongoing training. But if we have, high risk, low frequency requires a lot more training than, say, a low risk, high frequency. For example,
you're using the word risk relative to recidivism style, making another
risk to like harm. you know, in terms of liability to the county or harm to the officer themselves, physical harm. So that type of risk, changing gears from risk to recidivate.
Okay,
yeah, sorry about that. So we provided this matrix to the academy. They're using it in some of the trainings and meetings that they're having in terms of the curriculum development for DPSST. So that was encouraging that they're using our model. Custody alternative programs, switching gears from the field services division now to the custody alternative programs. As you can see with this quarter, we had a reduction in the average workers per day going from 11.5 to 9. A cumulative daily worker count went down slightly from 807 to 737.
Are you thinking, I mean, with the jail having more capacity, are you seeing more and more people that are credit time served by the time they're sentenced?
I don't know that. I could look into that. I didn't look at that before I came here. You'll see an increase in our number of people served for home detention went up. We started the food bank contract with UCAN. We're providing some crews every other week, and we'll continue that contract service in the upcoming fiscal year. So that's an encouragement to expand some of those services, and not just the services that we're continuing to do with ODOT and with some of the other contracts with the city. But we're in the process of renewing work crew contracts for the next fiscal year. All the city divisions we contract with are moving to a two-year contract instead of a one-year at this time, and so we're trying to make that adjustment as well. And on to the second page under treatment services. Outpatient treatment, our snapshot population went down just slightly from 103 to 96. We had 30 new enrollments, which is up just a little bit, which means that we had a few more discharges than we had enrollments this last quarter. Secure treatment at the jail went from 51 to 34. There was a mass exodus at one point throughout this last quarter because we found that all of the folks that were involved with secure treatment at that particular time were in violation of some of the program rules. And so we terminated every one of them. They went back into general population, and then we started afresh, which would explain the drop in this quarter's numbers. ADIS assessments are down just slightly. ADISs are the DUIs that come through our office, and then we outsource the treatment to our partnering agencies. Some of the significant division notes that we have is that we had two in-house mental health practitioners for on-site assessments right out of intake and throughout supervision for via PO referrals and case planning. We actually built two new offices within the treatment side, and those offices will be fully operational here within the next couple of weeks.
And those are contract with office, right?
That's correct.
Office employees, not county employees.
Yep, that is correct. And they're housed within our agency, and so we can use them to the full capabilities and extent that options allows us. We launched a process to provide in-house cognitive behavioral therapy to our A&D treatment exclusively to high-risk populations. So we used to open it up to medium-risk and low-risk folks. Now it is exclusively for high-risk people. So if you go back to the top of that page this quarter for the population of outpatient treatment folks, those are all high-risk people to recidivate within our treatment division. Everybody else is outsourced to community partnering agencies like Choices and ADAPT. We provided some consultation to a neighboring county who wants to start in-house treatment and model the program after ours. We sat down with their director for a couple of hours and explained the process of billing CCOs and coordinating those funds to provide the services. And so that was a neat opportunity for us to expand that modeling process. Other department notes, this is going back to just the general department. We participated in a justice system mapping discussion. Commissioner Morgan was there on April 19th as part of a CJC grant facilitated by Becky Nye, who's the Principal Center for Effective Public Policy and Technical Assistance Provider for the Bureau of Justice. She's provided a draft report where we're giving feedback on that, and then she'll provide a final report where we will consider those recommendations to change our justice system. We presented some justice reinvestment information on May 3rd to legislators at the Capitol Building advocating for funding on the upcoming biennium for JRI. Everybody that I talked to was very promising. People seemed to be very supportive of the justice reinvestment. It sounds like it'll be funded right around $40 million. The ask was 53 or close to $53 million. It looks like it's getting momentum to be funded at $40 million. And just so you know, our allocation will be increased from 2.87% to 2.99%. And that is based off of our snapshots from October 1st, November 1st, and December 1st of 2016. And what they do is they have a capitated rate for and a calculation for all the folks at Community Corrections that are under our jurisdiction. And we made sure it's based off of the assessments that our POs do or conduct. And we made sure that everybody was up to date, especially during those snapshots. And so kudos to our POs and our mm-hmm. practitioners at Community Corrections for completing all of those assessments on time, because
we swapped with Klamath.
Our allocation went up.
It used to be one above us, and now we're one above them. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's because it means we have more vendors.
Yeah, we just want to make sure that our funding is consistent with the amount of work that we're doing in the community. And so that was encouraging to see. We don't know what the actual numbers are going to be yet for Community Corrections. The last biennial was $247 million. We had 2.87% of that. The current ask is more than $247 million, and so we're hoping that we'll get an increase. But when we submitted our budget, we went from the current level of services, and so that might explain why we're asking for the current level of service funding in the budget that you're mm-hmm. Reviewing currently. But expect some changes within the next couple of months once we get that funding nailed down and we know exactly what we're getting. Case management information system stats updated.
And that's a two-year appropriation?
Yes, sir.
Okay, because yeah. It's a biennium. That's
yeah, every 2 years.
I was going to mention anticipating those, like the city doing a two-year contract and really going to be encouraging programs now that the levy has got a five-year. We have some stability, so you can have that a multi-year program in the jail, whereas before it may have been a little bit challenging to keep facilitating that. We need to look for a longer-term kind of vision and outcomes. Mm-hmm. Programmatic things we can do for more than just 1 year, I think, is really important. In fact, had we had the knowledge about a levy outcome, we might have proposed a two-year budget process this year as opposed to a one. Benton County does a multi-year budget process. Their funding's a little bit more stable, and having this biennium now, it would have been a perfect time to have advocated for a two-year budgeting process. And it would have given us the ability outside of your program, but maybe a little bit connected to the challenges that we have in multi-year budgeting for the juvenile and the jail in their ramp-up period. We could build it into a two-year, so you'd have some understanding that it's all going to wash out in 2 years rather than needing to make too much of an adjustment. But anyway, long version to say I encourage that. I think we encourage that as much as possible to build some stability into your programs.
Thank you.
That'd be great. Not to interrupt. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. And the very last diagram there, you'll see our CMIS, or our case management information system. We like to use the benchmark as for the state. We've exceeded the benchmark for the state on multiple different domains, including employment. This is our highest risk population in Josephine County, and we compare that with the highest risk population across the state. And our employment rates for those populations exceed the statewide average, which
we're
very encouraged by. Treatment, same thing. We exceed the statewide average there. Restitution collection We exceed the statewide average community service. We exceed the statewide average in positive case closures. For our post-prison population, that includes our local control folks that got revoked from probation but remained here in the local community, as well as the folks that are released from prison. Positive case closures there, we're below the state average. On the positive case closures for the probation side, we're above the state average. And then, of course, for risk recidivism, we're below the state average for that, and I want to explain a little bit about the recidivism, why we're in the red. And I believe it's because we are targeting our highest risk folks. Remember, on this particular diagram, it's recidivism for high and medium risk people. It's not the recidivism for the low risk people. And so the low risk people, we have a strategy to supervise them at a reduced rate. We're not deploying a lot of resources to our low risk population. And so the folks that are being convicted of new crimes, they should be, we should expect them to be convicted of, at a higher rate because they are high risk to recidivate. So that might explain some of the recidivism numbers there. Although it's always finite amount of numbers because it's a cohort. It's for a 6-month snapshot for that particular population. And so you take the next 6-month snapshot for a next population. So that number fluctuates over the course of time. So.
Does your high risk differ from the state? I mean, your matrix that you set up, say, yeah, this is medium to high risk mm-hmm. person. Is it the same as the state?
So, yeah.
So I don't mean to criticize because I just walked in the room. I apologize for being late, but it would think that we would be closer to the state unless we're doing something different from the state.
Yeah, so and let me explain.
Are ours the next notch up from medium and high medium to high, you know, are they the next notch up from the state?
Yeah, so this is based off of what's called the public safety checklist. And so what we end up doing here locally is that we do LSCMI's level service case management inventory triaged off of the PSC. So the PSC is higher medium risk, then we do a level service case management inventory assessment on that population. So I want to say that the state is completely the same, but I know based on our last meeting at OACCD that we have more LSCMIs completed as a rate than the rest of the state is as a collective body. So we're completing more LSCMIs. So
which
it's not necessarily apples to apples in terms
okay.
of the
that's what I wanted.
The risk.
Because we say, well, ours, you know, we're doing the high medium or high post-prison and all that stuff, that ours is higher because we've got a higher level of criminal than the state would on the average.
It's also a higher level of accountability, yeah. where we're working with the district attorney's office on some of them or the parole board on the other, where, Director Galloran does something with the pre-trial stuff for folks that are heading to prison. He's doing that LSCMI assessment to see who can stay in the community so we can keep our prison costs down. And we are doing better than most of our partners in that. But what it also means is those people are on kind of a one-shot chance to do well in probation. And if they get revoked and go to prison,
they're off prison.
That could affect that number. And that's something the district attorney's office is also a part of. And we don't control their philosophy on sentencing.
Okay.
I did want to give you an update that I know impacts us because at a department at our size, we work very closely with the drug team, with the state police and the city. Mm-hmm. And today, Representative Stark said that they were able to keep state police funding intact for
Fantastic.
That program.
Yeah.
And he mentioned Justice Reinvestment and CJC being intact at same service level. But like I said, I do want to follow up with you about the other portion later about that letter. But I was encouraged because I know that we do a lot with the state police detectives and our partnership with our canine unit and stuff like that. So
that's encouraging. Thank you. Anything else for community corrections?
I think we did the legislative stuff. I think I mentioned the long-term types of vision for your program, so we can kind of chart that course where you're at. I had mentioned before the meeting, we're working out a solution for work crews for the Parks Department. So Arthur and I will be bringing to you an approval for that, but keeping the program funded for at least the month or two until we work it out to continue that. The parks can't continue the way they are without it. You know, you provide a vital service for them. So the only one, Diane's not here, but at the WIR conference, there was a big last day session, two speakers on the issue of health in a community and the opioid issue nationally. I could be wrong, but the statistics that I've heard about Josephine County are not stellar. They're really pretty terrible, first in the state and like seventh in the nation. And there was an element of convening, the power of convening. I'm not sure if it's in your wheelhouse or something you wanted to do, Commissioner Morgan, but I think the board as a whole, working with community corrections, the jail, public health, and maybe even mental health, needs to think about that as potentially a forum that we would host here in the summer or the fall. Looking at that is something we would do to bring about kind of a holistic approach to addressing this issue and have kind of a strategy. Everybody seems to be working on different elements, but that's a major lift for any individual program. We all need to kind of come together and figure out that we're focused in on that is some sort of an issue, and is there a potential solution out there? Things that were, you've mentioned some stuff about this issue, Commissioner DeYoung, so I wouldn't want to say that it's just one member of the board. I think we all have an interest in this.
Oh, I do. I think so. It's a rising problem nationally. Finally, it's starting to get some attention nationally, and people are bringing it out of the dark.
Yeah. The state of Ohio filed a lawsuit against the pharmaceutical industry. It was in the news yesterday because of the advertising and false pretense and failing to acknowledge the addictive element of
right.
it. And we've talked about
yeah,
that.
We've talked about that.
The other piece, Commissioner Heck hosted, USDA was here, and the it was out of the White House Rural Initiative last year on the topic of opioids. We were both there. Many community members, every aspect of the community was there represented. But what failed to follow up was, okay, great, we all acknowledge there's a problem, what do we do? And I think that's the piece that we've missed locally is, we've acknowledged it's an issue. We know there's groups working on. One thing that's happened since then is the Grants Pass Treatment Center has opened.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a need to have a plan locally. And I think that, it was a good start last year, but what's the next phase?
Yeah, I may not have been aware of that, or if I was, it wasn't on my radar. But so maybe the next one is developing a strategy for how are we cohesively kind of figuring out a solution.
I brought it up and I went through partway through legal and probably just got shelved because it wasn't. But on any habit-forming drug, needs to have a tariff, tax, fee, or whatever per pill to discourage prescribing these things at by the hundreds and by the 40s and whatever. And they're all prescription drugs. Oh, no, you can't touch a prescription drug. But there's a difference between habit-forming prescription drugs and my metformin. There's a real difference there. And if you say if this is a habit-forming drug, then it must got to fall into its own category. Because that's where it's coming from. It starts with, most of these things, starts with painkiller. Mm-hmm. That the doctor prescribes. And it says right on the bottle, 12 of these could be habit-forming, and then he prescribes 40. What do you do that for? So I think it needs to follow the pill and then take an aspect of, say, it's $5 a pill or something, and part of it goes to treatment and part of it goes to law enforcement because they're the ones that have to enforce this stuff. And just start right there. You have
doctor pharmaceutical education on this. They're just prescribing.
Exactly.
At this conference, they were mentioning something about there's a threshold that a federal agency allows the amount of opioid type of stuff coming into the country, and it's all based on demand, not on need.
Right.
And so as the prescriptions go up, whether or not they're actually ever used, the allocation that this federal agency allows to be brought into the country just keeps to increasing.
And they're not realizing that if they, like, for instance, so I had a tooth pulled, the guy said, well, I'll get you some pretty stout painkillers, of which your pharmacy is, well, XYZ pharmacy. And I said, but I don't want that. I said, I'll take a couple of Tylenol or Advil or something. I'll be fine. Nope, I'm going to go ahead and make sure because you're going to need these and blah, blah, blah. I said,
they're
I
just
said,
pushing
no.
It.
Exactly. And I finally, I sat him down, I said, sit down in the chair while I've still got the Novocaine in. And I said, you're going to understand something. So here's what happened. You prescribed that to me. It sits on the shelf out there at XYZ. And it sits there for a week. And the little girl that works in the back goes, Mr. DeYoung's not going to pick that up, but he's on Medicare. So guess what? I'm going to go ahead and take that with me, sign his name. I'm going to take that with me, go sell it on the street. Nobody will ever be the wiser. He'll never even know that he paid for it. And I said, you have just given that young lady the opportunity to become a pusher. And I said, you did it trying to help me out, and I don't want your help.
Yeah.
So just when I tell you no, I will check at XYZ Pharmacy to make sure you didn't call that in. Because I'm going to stop it right here in this chair. I'm not going to get out of this room. And if more people did that, maybe we'd be all right. But it was just disgusting to me that they continue to push this stuff off on it. I had the same thing when I had open heart surgery. Well, we're going to get you these big pain pills. I said, I don't want them. Give me two Tylenol. No, I'll tough it out. And there's different thresholds.
Sure,
sure. I understand
sure.
that. You know,
sometimes
some people
can't
handle
pain,
but other people can.
It needs to be regulated a little bit. Yeah. Mr. Gowrie-Rand, that's all I have. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good run, by the way.
Oh, thanks, sir.
You counted laps. Didn't see you on that last lap there. What happened, brother?
No, I made it. I
Did
made
you?
It,
okay,
sir.
All right. I want to make sure.
Somebody running?
Pam and I were walking on the beach over at the coast, and Nate and his buddy ran by. I'll be darned. I just saw Nate, I think.
Wow, that was a generous description. More like a shuffling by.
Well, you're out. Paced my wife and I by quiet. They made two laps when we just walked down the beach.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Good morning. So, as the finance portion of this meeting, the only item on the agenda is the request for approval to purchase out of the equipment reserve the two Vermeer chippers. And I believe Director Brandis met with Commissioner DeYoung to discuss the purchase of these two, and so we're bringing it forward to the board. The reason I'm bringing it forward is that these specific purchases were not identified in the budget document, although the Public Works and the Equipment Reserve has the budget and the funds, but these specific purchases were not identified as part of the budget, so any disbursement from the Equipment Reserve I bring to the board for your information and approval. And so that's where we're at today.
Well, I had asked that this be, you know, reviewed by the liaison and the director. It seems pretty expensive for these two machines, and then I know we are getting a Public Works kind of review and says what should we be doing, what can we, you know, maybe potentially outsource or what have you. The thing for me is that we always want to make sure that the stuff on the ground is done really, really well and thoroughly. But I do know that there are tree trimming services that, like Pacific Power outsources to like Trees Incorporated or ODOT does the same thing. And just wondering if an evaluation had been done as to whether or not it makes sense to do it in-house. And then I know that the stuff that Public Works often has to purchase is fairly expensive, and they do a really thorough job. I can remember the grade all that we purchased two years ago. The previous grade all was fully depreciated to the nth degree. A used one was found out in the Midwest for $225,000 or something. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. That's crazy expensive. You start looking around, though. Grade alls are not cheap, and what they are able to do is extensive. So you got to have one of those in your fleet. These are pretty expensive chippers, and so I just have to make sure that we're all, you know, looking to the whites of the eyes. When I've looked at chippers for personal, you know, and I know these are commercial grade, and I've looked at some of those too. I've never seen any that were this is expensive for. And I know the lifespan on this has got to be 20 years. I want to make sure that we're looking at our program we're not chipping stuff typically over 6-8 inches anyway. You know, at that point, it's firewood for somebody. I know it's a cumbersome situation to have to manage that, but I see as routine maintenance, we're probably not actively chipping large stuff, except for after a snow event, which is on occasion. So I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page. This is the discussion.
Well, Director Brandis and I talked about it, you know, and those were things, issues that came up. You mentioned Trees Incorporated, and I think Director Brandis told me that Trees Incorporated is no more, and it's been bought out by two mm-hmm. other companies, and one of the two companies has had a couple of pretty major complaints on their, I guess, job quality. And they also had a death in the family type thing here last year in California. So that those are things that I look at. For one thing, is because the quality and the completion of the job that we have to sign off on, is it done when it gets done? When if you do that in-house, we have that control. And then we looked at the fact, we looked at the man hours that are spent. That was a big thing in my mind is can we cut down on the man hours by farming this out? Yes, of course we can. But we looked at the overall man hours, I believe at 50, how many thousand hours?
About 5,000.
5,000 hours last year, and figured that the current chipper, the way it is about down on performance by about 30%. So if you put a new chipper in, you're going to save about 25% of that labor, because you're going to get the job done faster and be on your way and do a better job of it. Those are things that we kind of looked at back and forth, and yeah, it's a lot of money. I mean, it's $100,000 for two of them.
Do we need two? We have the crews for two.
We do. In the winter, it's typically going to be two crews going out most of the time. Okay. So yeah, like Commissioner said, about 5,000 hours a year, $160,000 in labor. So that to me is kind of the part we'd be talking about. Do we look at farming this out potentially? And my concern, well, it's twofold. Number one is we do a lot of on-demand chipping where we have an event. We've got to get out there and do stuff, after-hours calls. Not. The other part is I see those contracts as being extremely admin-heavy to monitor in terms of saying, hey, you can't say, go out to Jerome Parade Road, go spend 30 hours, hopefully you get it done. What does that look like? The guys on our crews, the leads have been chipping for probably 6 to 8 seasons, so they've got an idea to kind of say, hey, here's about how far you need to get that knocked back for sight lines, trying to balance it without having folks come out and say, hey, you just scalped this whole road. What the heck happened here? To the point of why replacing them now, yeah, we're probably running at about 70% efficiency on them. So in terms of diameter of wood we're able to shove in, how fast we can shove it in, yeah, they're having to hold it back. Typical, they're going to be chipping anything up to probably 4 inches. So if we're now running it, you know, we can only run a 3-inch type log, or we've got to feed them in slower. Yeah, that cuts into the guy's performance. And I'm with, you know, if there's places we can farm stuff out, I'm all for it. That's why we've stopped asphalt overlays, you know, bridge, major bridge work, deep covers, that kind of a thing. But for me, that $160,000 of labor a year that we average, the potential savings there in terms of what it's going to mean for, I think, less customer satisfaction, if you will, with calls in and just how those jobs get done, and our time to monitor those contracts, I don't see a payoff there. The comparisons are in from the Public Works Survey. Everyone does chipping in-house, with the exception of us in Jackson County, who contract out dangerous trees. If they're near the wires, obviously we get out of the way. We do let the PP&L subs do that. But if we've got trees that are either excessively high, between houses, those kinds of things, we don't touch those. You know, there's no reason for us to go try to take down that 100-foot tree. Let the professional tree fallers do that stuff. So that's why
ours is just a vegetation management.
By and large, ours is stuff you could reach with a pole saw
and
below.
Right. Right. I would think so. That should be the priority.
And if it is bigger trees, to your point, we'll take it down, buck it up into firewood length, and then effectively leave it on the side of the road.
And somebody picks it up.
And it's scalped up pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Is were there, what other kinds of chipping apparatus did we look at, or are those?
There's two primary ones, two primary models, and this is through Orpin, so it's effectively, it's, you know, as good as we're going to get. It's either the Vermeer or the Bandits that we have now. Those are kind of the two industrial
strength
chippers that are out there without.
Are they diesel, hydraulic?
Yeah, and they are. And these we had hoped to live along another year, but these are one of those where you kind of
I don't mind
run
replacing. It just seems really expensive. I mean, when I'm looking out there on equipment traders, and unfortunately, I'm on that stuff like every week.
Yeah.
This is an excess of what I typically see out there as a cost. I mean, I can buy, you know, I'm not going to, my range for buying something at the ranch is probably the $6,000-$7,000.
Mm-hmm.
Your guys is, what I'm thinking you're going to need is probably closer to the $25,000. I'm just wondering, how do we get to, what's the justification for, you know, this is a very, very nice Vermeer, that's a great brand, and I'm totally, diesel's the way to go, all that stuff. How do we get to that? What's the justification for that?
Effectively, I mean, in terms of size-wise and how much it can produce, what diameter log it can take, this is the size we need to buy, and for an industrial-grade chipper, that is what you're going to look at for cost.
And it's on state price agreement.
It's on state price, yeah. So it's already been publicly bid out at the state level to obtain it in a bulk fashion. So Vermeer probably got contracted.
$2,000 shipping cost. It seems a little excessive.
The alternative being we send two guys up, you know, put it onto a low boy and yard them back down. So, yeah, there's not a...
Where's that to?
Oh, these were coming out of Portland area.
Because, no offense, that's cheaper than $2,000.
Maybe. Well, they're not bigger than my truck, and I had it shipped out here.
No, we'd have to take the low boy up to get them both down.
You're not going to haul it on my car trailer, I can tell you that much.
How much do they weigh?
Huh?
How much do they weigh?
I don't have a GVW on there. I would guess, you know, 3,500 pounds.
Question. I have a question. The ones that we have now, do they have any value on putting them out on the market?
They've got some
$5,000 chipper.
They've got some minimal salvage. Yeah, we would do that.
I mean, not probably salvage, but
potentially
I mean,
even offer them up if Parks had a need for that. I think we've done that in the past.
Yeah, do they work? I mean,
they would be fine if you were manicuring a park.
Yeah, but when you've got, I totally get it. When you got six guys standing around. That's not the thing you want to wait on.
That one, right. That can't be the slow point.
Get it, trade it out. You're right, there could be a value there. I'm not opposed to buying new ones.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure that the evaluation's been done, that we're, you know, these are the right ones for the right money, and they're going to be in a program that we're going to have. I don't want to find after this report that says, you know, frankly, it's probably a wash, but you're not having to maintain and buy $100,000 chippers in 3 years, and we have to get rid of them, and the depreciation is 50%, and we're selling them for 25, you know, because that's exactly what they're going to be worth after a season. You put 1,000 hours on something, and it's a significant difference to brand new.
Right.
Because see it all the time on stuff. But you also take that risk of buying something. What were they feeding through fence posts? You know, for the first 1,000 hours.
Getting, partly right, and the other reality is with the state bid, you're getting things probably 25% below market. My guess is if you went out to price these out on the market, they're going to be $60,000 a piece.
Wow,
yeah, it's an expensive piece.
Well, the bid itself had knocked $15,000 off. So,
yeah, I wish there was a cheap way to do business, but once you get to that size, it's kind of what we need to get at least up to regularly.
I do want to make sure that we're not feeding stuff through that's like 6-8 inches.
There's no reason for
that.
Once it gets that big, it's left there on
the side. But you don't want to have to limit tree to throw it in there. So that's why you want that 12-15 inch.
Buck it up and leave it there.
Yeah.
No, there's, depending on where we go, you will actually have folks almost following us up the road.
Standing there waiting for you.
Yep.
So.
I wasn't one of them. Just kidding.
Commissioner DeYoung, as a liaison, I'm looking to you to say yay or nay, and I think you've said yes.
We'll move it forward. I see the value in the 30% in productivity out of this machine over the one we have now. Those labor hours is what we're trying to save, in my mind. Or even if we farmed it out, you're saving the labor hour. So we either pay for this ourselves and then reap the benefit of those labor hours, or we farm out the whole thing maybe for a couple of years and see how it works out. But
this is a
very visible thing on the side of the road.
Two.
When you get all done, you want it cleaned up to your standard, to our standards, not Stumps Incorporated or whoever else is out there.
In their department, too. Because I know Community Corrections has one for the work crew.
Oh, sure.
And they work with Parks and loan it to Parks.
So I'm going to say yes.
Okay. Let's move it forward.
Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioner DeYoung, can you handle it? Great. I think we've been over it pretty thoroughly.
Okay.
Sounds good.
I'll show up if you need me.
My fault.
I'm around.
My fault, I'll take it.
I've got just a couple updates and questions. So the budget was approved at the budget meeting on Tuesday, so that was very
What's
good.
What's the correct wording, Arthur? I mean, they're making basically a recommendation that the board approve, or you have got it delineated as
right.
they've approved it and
correct.
We adopt it.
That's correct.
Is that the correct
That's the
phraseology?
Legal
Because I've
phrases.
Heard
yeah.
other phrases, and I want us to all be consistent.
No,
in our
I propose the budget, you know, with
yes.
direction from the board to prepare the budget, and then the budget that I prepare as the budget officer is the proposed budget, and that's what's presented to the budget committee is the proposed budget. Once they make changes or not change anything, it's up to the budget committee. But once they finish their job, then it's approved, which they would make a motion to, you know, approve the budget and approve the dollar amount and the FTE level, as well as levying the taxes. So according to Oregon budget law, that's the responsibility of the budget committee. And then that becomes the approved budget. And then the approved budget is published in the newspaper, which we're going to get that to the paper this week,
mm-hmm.
Published in the newspaper, and then we set a public hearing for the approved budget. Once the public hearing is done, then it goes to the Board of Commissioners, closes the public hearing, and goes into a regular board weekly business session, and then you adopt the budget. So that's the phrases that are used in Oregon budget law.
Okay. Does the public have the opportunity to speak at the adoption?
At the public hearing.
And actually both.
So they have going forward from here, they have two opportunities, the one coming out after you publish.
Correct.
Correct.
That's specifically the public hearing, which by definition is for public comment. The weekly business session where you adopt the approved budget
isn't the formal hearing. It's just
right. It's just a regular weekly business session, and the board has adopted the pattern of allowing public comment at those meetings.
Okay.
You don't have to. I mean, legally, it's a public meeting, but doesn't require public comment. But this Board of Commissioners has decided that in every business session, you're going to have public comment. So they'll have two on that basis.
Okay.
So what we, along those lines, then the dates that I'm looking at is basically to get it published and then to put it on the, typically what you've done is you put the public hearing at 9 o'clock on the Wednesday of the public, of the weekly business session, just as a matter of scheduling and convenience. You could put the public hearing anytime, any day you want, but typically it seems appropriate and seems to have worked very well to have it tagged on at the front end of the weekly business session. So what I'm asking is that I'm looking at probably June 21st, then the weekly business session of June 21st, to have the public hearing. And that would be just at 9 o'clock, you know, you would open as the public hearing and then, you know, take comment, have discussion, and then close.
And then adoption would be the 28th?
It would be up to the board what you want to do. You could adopt right away.
We really need to adopt
It has to be by June 30th. You have to adopt by June 30th.
We typically adopt at the same meeting that we have the public hearing.
Yeah, typically,
mm-hmm.
absolutely,
okay.
yes. Because you close the public hearing and then you go into a regular weekly business session, adopt the budget. And the reason that works well is because, frankly, everybody who has wanted to comment on the budget basically has commented on the budget. I mean,
well, we're required
a
as a committee to take public comment at least at one hearing. We do it at all of our hearings.
Yes.
And so there's that opportunity. There's after it's adopted, the public hearing that's required by the board.
After it's approved, before it's adopted.
Yeah.
And then when it, so there's really three opportunities.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because if it's approved, and then now we're going to the adoption
right.
mm-hmm. phase. So we have a public hearing on the approved budget.
Right.
And then that's why I was asking it. And then do you have a separate day that you adopt it that you have another public hearing?
No.
Another public comment period on
there is a public comment period as part of our weekly business session
okay.
agenda. It'll be an administrative item. It'll be probably 2A, because the hearing is 1. then the agenda is 2A on the admin calendar. And then before we do that, we'll take public comment, which is item number 3.
Okay.
And then we'll come back and take action on the administrative calendar.
And all have had three separate
opportunities.
And the board at that point in time before adoption has an opportunity to make changes if the board wishes to make changes, you know, within that 10% parameter. We've done that before. There was a time, as I recall, just many years ago where the budget committee removed a particular program in public health. The budget committee said, we don't want that program, so we're reducing public health budget by, I think it was $10,000, a particular grant. The Board of County Commissioners then reestablished or reinstituted that budget item before they adopted it. So part of your discussion, make a motion to increase the budget by $10,000 for public health. All in favor say aye. So you, the board, has an opportunity to make changes to the budget prior to adoption.
Okay.
So, and you could do that also based on the public comment. So the public hearing, somebody comes up with this fantastic idea or thought or suggestion, and you know, the board is able to take action on that prior to adoption.
Well, we have had public comment at every meeting anyway.
Right, right.
So,
and the board can make adjustments to the budget.
Yes.
Every week, every month, every year. So anytime if something comes up that needs adjusting, we can do that. True. So.
So I will move forward then with the June 21st date, because that'll be published in the newspaper, that we will hold a public hearing on the approved budget.
Is that the soonest we can get it? What's this?
We cannot make the 7th because we have to have a minimum of the 5-day publication. So it will probably be published on the 6th, June 6th. You could make the 14th as a weekly business session, but that, I believe, is your evening session. So whether you'd want the public hearing at an evening or whether you'd want it in the in a regular morning.
I don't know that it matters.
To you.
I don't know that matters to anybody. I mean, there are people. Oh, okay. There are people who would like the opportunity to come, but I think we get more attendance actually at our morning meetings than we do in the evenings.
That's what I've experienced.
Especially in the summertime, people seem distracted in the evenings. There's other things going on.
Me too. I get home and I get to work because there's hours in the day to work.
Yeah. So
that's
from the public side. But that's, like I said, the public hearing could be any day. It doesn't have to be in conjunction with the weekly business session.
It will be. That'll be fine. Okay. We'll keep it. The 21st sounds great.
Okay, the 21st. And then we're working through the supplemental budget, which would be decisions that have been made throughout the entire year, grants that have been received and changes. So these are things that the board has typically already approved in the course of events, but now we're going to formally process them through a supplemental budget. So we'll get that information to you as soon as possible, but I was thinking of June 28th, and that's not a public hearing, that's just a part of your weekly business session. So
I'm still... on the budget process, mm-hmm. I don't think that I have not had enough time to really ponder the fact that we don't have stable funding for other portions of the law enforcement system within Josephine County, and I'm thinking specifically of the DA. The idea that we're spending down reserves to maintain a level... And we haven't had that discussion about reserve policy, so general fund. I mean, this board hasn't. Previous boards have, and the expectation of having around a $6 million 10%, and that's really not 10% of the size of this budget. And we don't have to achieve that tomorrow, but there is no allocation being given to the general fund and improving that reserve. In fact, we're using some of that in order to make our system work this year, and I'm not okay with that. And I don't, you know, you guys can be, that's fine, you're going to inherit this, but I want a system I'd like to leave a system in place that says these are our goals for each of these things, and they're going to happen not overnight, but in order to achieve a $6 million and our ending fund is four and our projected, you're going to need to set aside $2 million over the next 5 years, which is $400,000, and you're not doing it this year, or at least we don't have plans to. It definitely could come to fruition that we would have $400,000, but I'm just using that as an example of have we really thought about all of these other things? We're going to have to take a fairly significant cut in the district attorney's office, say that state doesn't pick it up in 2 years based on the current projections of revenues. I don't like that.
Yeah.
We're both going to be out of reserves, and we're going to have to make another reduction in the system that's going to impact some stuff. So I would rather lay out a multi-year strategy. And so I want an opportunity for that conversation to happen. And really what I need to do, sounds like I don't remember her name. What is her? She's Speaker of the House. Well, we have to vote on this bill before we can actually figure out what we're going to do.
Nancy Pelosi.
The nice thing is that we can actually figure out and change some of these things, and it doesn't take an act of Congress in order to do that. So I'm advocating that we go through this budget process, take the approved budget, adopt it, but with the understanding in all these departments that things could change, even public works. I think that there's some changes that I would like to see as a result of this.
I don't think we've really had ample time, and we certainly haven't as a board
sat
down and taken that study bit by bit, piece by piece. Mm-hmm. But I think you mentioned earlier, Chairman, that going forward, none of this is cast in stone.
Right.
It's cast in stone at the time, mm-hmm. but we can certainly revisit any part of it at any time. And I think we need to pledge that we're going to do that.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Then I don't need to labor it.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. Good.
Anything else?
Two quick little things. I'm still working with Karen Homolek of Business Oregon on getting additional funding for the remediation of the underground storage tanks at the Dimmick property. So there was some contamination of the soil, and the potential cost if we move forward is anywhere from $50,000 to $75,000 to fully remediate. That could include soil removal and taking to the dry creek, water, if the water table has been contaminated. So I'm working with Karen right now to secure additional funding from Business Oregon to pay for that. And as far as payment is concerned, I also want to say that I went to the Solid Waste Agency meeting over here at the City Hall a couple weeks ago, and they approved $22,000, my request for $22,000 to assist with the solid waste removal at the A Street building. So all the junk that we took out of the building and I have to dispose of, the underground storage tanks themselves that we had to dispose of. So they approved that.
That's really helpful.
So that'll be additional funding for that.
And that's my understanding from a previous board that we're working to a no further action letter mm-hmm. on that campus.
Yes.
And I don't want to skip anything. I don't want to do it halfway. So if there's, and the nice thing is that the opportunity for grant funds for petroleum-based challenges is much better than everything else we've ever tried to do. That's where the money goes ideally first. And so those have always been told to us that we have potentially up to $200,000 of funds for those kinds of remediations on this campus. So I feel really good that we're looking at only needing maybe in worst case scenario 70. Mm-hmm. The funds should be there for this.
How? Yeah. I'm getting down in my nuts and bolts. How did they determine that there was contamination? Is it just splashing around the fill neck, or did the tank ever leak and be replaced?
Well, it wasn't the tank leaking and replacing. It was over time, which the tank has been there probably since the 1940s. It leaked, even I don't know when, at what point in time it leaked, but there was leaks. So they did soil samples, and they had the name of the company, I forget what the name of the company, Environmental Cleanup, came in to do the sampling and, sent it back to the lab, and it showed contamination above the acceptable levels.
I understand it was pretty close, though, so they're looking to do additional sampling. Mm-hmm. Have they done that?
No, they're well, they took, you know, initial sample, then they did more sampling, and then we have Moll Foster as our consultant, to oversee the whole process, and the samples came back that it needs to be remediated. DEQ is involved, state DEQ is involved in that, and so they're looking to see what we want to do. I mean, we can put it off. Somebody's going to have to address it.
You've got to get it out of there.
Somebody's got to get it out of there.
You have to have a certificate that says you've done everything you're supposed to do.
Yeah, I think so.
Once you have that diploma, so to speak, you're all set.
Then the developer has got a green light.
The developer comes in and says, do you have any underground storage tanks? Yes, we have three. Here's our paperwork on all three of them.
Yeah, no further action required.
No further action required on any of them. The tanks are gone. They weren't just filled with slurry. They're gone. The dirt's gone. It's all been taken care of, compacted, and ready to go. That's worth probably $50,000 to $75,000.
Well, and that's the extent. Now, I think
might be worth more than that because nobody's going to touch that property without one of those.
Yeah. Right. No, you have to have that hurdle taken care of.
And that's the big one. The big one.
Yeah, the
asbestos and stuff. Somebody could take care of that. We're going to take care of it, but somebody else could too. That one is a major one. You don't want to start digging and not know. And
that one thing is what stopped me from voting to purchase
Decay Street,
4th Street, that 8th Street thing.
Yeah,
because the DEQ guy stood up there and I said, "You have your certificate. I need to see that. Well, you got that in the book there." What? And he flat said, "We found a little bit where they, you know, changed the oil filter on that above ground tank." And I said, "Why is the above ground tank there?" Because I'm the guy that put that above ground tank in because the 1,000-gallon tank right underneath it sprung a leak. And we never took the 1,000-gallon tank out. It's still down there. So when he says it's all taken care of. And then he didn't have certificates on the two tanks over by L Street where they use for refueling because there are two tanks over there, one diesel and one regular. So those people are aware of it.
Yeah. We still have one active tank there at the site. Which
but
is
that
being
one's
used.
Been certified and it's good to go.
Yeah, and it's
is
in
it
good
underground?
Shape. No.
No.
No, it's an underground tank. Yeah, but it's still there and it's in use and it's been inspected and all that. But
that one shouldn't be a problem.
No.
Yeah.
No.
At that one, if they want to take that out, they'll just pop that out of the ground and fill the hole in because there's no remediation needs to be done. That's
it's like an up-to-date certified tank.
That's a very lucrative business because I used to do tanks.
Oh, yeah, well.
I used to decommission a lot of oil tanks.
You know, if the if a developer comes in and says you've got a tank there, and it looks like $50,000 to $75,000 to remediate that, to remove it, then he's going to deduct $150,000 to $250,000 from from his price.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So
let's get it done and get it over.
And that's
it'd be interesting. Is there any oil in that tank? The one that's in the ground right now that needs to come out.
Oh, there's diesel on it.
Oh yeah, the one that's still being used.
No, the one you're taking out.
No,
it's already
gone.
Been removed, yeah.
Okay,
no, they had the stuff they had to remove from that, they had to use a shovel to get it out because it was that coalesced or coagulated. Yeah, thank you.
The next thing for Arthur is working on the sheriff's long-term vision for the program. But in the short term, I think one of the goals that this board has is to improve the evidence facility and probably relocate it. So I'd like just preliminary approval for Ryan, Arthur, and the sheriff and I to work on facility element of where on your footprint at the jail would you like to put it? What's that going to entail to move Carrie's inventory? Or hopefully what can we reduce before we have to move, kind of get that yard sale stuff done before you're moving? And then what would we want to do with repurposing that old evidence facility, either sell it or, you know, repurpose it for something else? I don't know.
Prime industrial park.
It kind of is employment opportunity with that 5 acres that's next to it.
I see. They are evidence. You know, some of those wrecked cars and stuff that are over there.
Apparently, and I don't know how long we have to keep them.
Do we have space?
Can we take real good pictures of them and then kick it? You know, I don't know. Yeah. I like the idea of when you have to move, you pick the stuff that you have that you're gonna move right. with, as opposed
before
to
before I moved, I had a half a dozen garage sales to get rid of stuff that I thought, you know what, you take it for 50 cents, I don't ever have to lift it again.
Yeah,
and that was very important to me.
I think that we need like a 6 month year plan, but Ryan needs to get it in his queue for the next year of what am I working on, and that for me is a major. It's a major project, but really the bang for the buck of getting Carrie into a facility that meets her needs. She helps design those Connex facilities. Make sense to me. They're fairly cheap.
Well, another thing that the sheriff was talking to was a deputy's room. You have this
patrol headquarters,
and was talking about another facility out there. And I think Ryan encouraged him to move inside on the same footprint.
Well, so in the original design, it was
Bomb is using a lot of that space for storage and just versus
and
utilizing
they can move out
for
their stuff and let them patrol.
Not that much. I've been in there just a couple months ago, and I can see the shelves on the far side and an office space, but there's that big mat that they roll out for their training and stuff, and then the office. It is not adequate for who's in there right now. He adds 6 more patrol deputies, and it's really not going to be.
No.
It was never designed for that.
Well, and we as a county should be looking bigger than just these departments and offices, because Community Corrections, when they moved, before they moved to the Washington Annex, we shared the jail training space for defense tactics and training in there with those mats that rolled out. But since they moved into this facility, they have their own mats in a larger training space available, and there's no reason why the sheriff's office couldn't utilize this, because we've already done it with both city police and sheriff's office in joint training at this location.
There's also a gym located in the justice building that DEA is using for file storage that they're looking to archive electronically those files, and it's a gym. I mean, it's a basketball court style area as well.
And where's that at?
It's up on the top floor of the justice building.
Oh, yeah.
So there's an opportunity. I think you're right that we need to look at what do we have facilities that we could.
Do each of these departments really need their own training location when we have departments of similar goal and function that can do the same training in the same location?
I think it's a good.
Well, every school needs their own track field and football stadium.
Good idea.
Football area.
That's different. They have 500 plus people at each location. We're talking 6 people plus another 50 in the jail. They can coordinate.
Yeah. Okay.
Potentially.
I like that. Well, maybe we need to schedule a facilities conversation. I think the evidence one is should be fairly simple.
Well, the evidence one I think should be one of the very first ones. The evidence and control.
Mm-hmm. Getting that solution.
Should be, 1 and 2.
Yep.
And that would include looking at those modular units that, because I think they have plenty of land out there that could be fairly easily utilized and protected too, because I think part of the issue is,
that stuff is vulnerable.
Are you talking like the storage container?
Well,
just the general locale of where it is right now. It isn't.
Well, it out there on the one that.
On
you have to maintain.
The evidence locker as it stands right now.
Yeah.
Wide open.
You have to maintain control of the evidence through the whole process, and nobody's going to mess with it at the jail.
Yeah.
Right. That's we secure
make that,
location.
We make that into a compound, and I'd rather do that, and then. Mm-hmm. Then we just put it there for.
And it's a smart move, and at least in my viewpoint, the county is consolidating. We're not going to grow again. We're consolidating, and so we should reduce our footprint where we can, reduce the number of buildings we have where we can, utilize our space as efficiently as we can. So.
Well, that's the first one I thought Ryan and I can kind of lean into and give you guys a chance to hear a proposal or two. These are the 3 options that we have. I like options. I think you guys probably would too. Emergency preparedness manager. We need to. We're scheduling interviews for that later on this month, and we'll be moving that forward. Also, we're putting to bed the. I think we're on to board business, and you're going to have a chance to bring up your DA letter. And I'm reading a draft of the CWPP. It's riveting. It's just about 300 pages, and I'm about 150 in. You're not going to have to read it to the degree that I am, but this is a $100,000 contract, a multi-year program. since 2014. I think we've
been CWPP stands for
Community Wildfire Protection Plan. So this is a comprehensive revision. It's the first one in the state, maybe the nation, that's been done on a regional basis, Jackson and Josephine County. And I've kind of been the guy, the policy person from the beginning. Everybody at ODF has changed. Joel is the attorney for Jackson County. He's their liaison to this. And before that, it was Commissioner Bridenthal, and he's no longer on the project. So it's really just been me and maybe Jenny. And so I'm going to get it done today. One of the reasons that I'm mentioning that is just so that if we don't have to have a general discussion at 2, it'd be really great, because it's my comments are due by Friday.
And I'm going to grab my paperwork then, because
I still have 100 pages to read.
Can we have an agenda item on general discussion?
More so than the economic development?
No. That.
I think we can talk about it here and start moving forward.
That's what I was grabbing, dude.
Yeah.
I would love to do that as well.
Okay, great. So let's do the DA letter, and then we'll do the economic development, unless there's anything else that people had for the general discussion. I don't mind coming into that, but if we could avoid a general discussion this afternoon, I'm okay with that, too. You're okay
I'm
with it?
I'm great with that.
Okay. All right. Great. Do you want to
the only other thing I have on my topic as well is I want to bring up blue zones.
Okay.
When it won't be long. I just want to.
Should we take a minute to read this draft?
Please.
If we haven't. Have
so you? Just to give you a heads up, I didn't know if he would be here in time for the meeting.
Yeah.
So as an FYI, I gave him a copy last night so that he could weigh in on it separately. So Commissioner DeYoung saw it. I passed it through legal last night before they left.
Okay.
This is what they've, they didn't really change. There was just like 3 little edits. And I had to steal one of your words.
So there's a couple of minor things that I have suggestions that I can work with maybe the office on. They're just little phraseology things. I think the bigger one is the final paragraph about specifically our ask. And I'm thinking that we need to do something in the way of we would like to request a contact from their office that we can work with maybe and set up a schedule a date.
Okay.
The board would like to have that answer before. By a date, by June 15th, please designate someone from your office that we can work specifically on this project with. And
And do you want me just to add it to that paragraph?
No, I think you could totally put that's your ask paragraph, which is really good.
Is state supposed to be, we have it over here as these services are state functions with a capital S, and then we use state again, the state previous, should state have a capital S on all times you mention state as a entity?
Technically, the first one should be lowercase, and the second one should be capitalized, because if we're talking about our state versus, the second one should be capitalized, the state previously funded.
Where are you on the second page?
Yeah, so the state previously, that should have been capitalized because it was referring to Oregon State. But I will fix those.
I would also suggest that perhaps maybe you say you're available on June 12th, being up there for AOC, and you'd like to be able to meet with them, that representative, at 2 p.m. You'll come by her office.
And then it's up to them trying to keep. On paragraph two, rather than put unfortunately, because that sounds like we're still dismayed, but however, this has not changed the overall circumstances in your state. Instead of unfortunately.
Well, let's talk about that, though, because I think we are still dismayed. We still, the need is that we are still in crisis of sorts. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that's kind of what I was saying. I have written down here, keeping our public safe to the degree we would like, or something like that. There's an element of degree. It's not as though we're not keeping the public safe. We're making every effort to do so. It's just not, we are unable to meet our goal of providing patrol services at a 24-hour,
Yeah,
does that make sense?
It does. I think, that's part of why I was saying in the very last sentence of that paragraph that says there's still a way to go before delivering the necessary service we're required to provide as mm-hmm. well. Okay, so do you want however instead of unfortunately? I think there's still, based on the legislative call this morning.
It's coming from all of us.
It's all three of our signatures, it's not just me. If it were me, I would have. So this morning, Commissioner Stark said they're still pushing for getting a fifth judge at Josephine County. So if there's an area that the state is looking at partnering with Josephine County in a bigger financial way, it's going to be, there's been three studies that have shown where additional judicial positions are necessary. In those three studies, the most recent one, in all three of those, Josephine County is in the top two. The most recent one put Josephine County as first in the state for needing an additional judicial. He stated that by this levy passage, the state is taking us seriously as being a partner at this point, and it's actually changed the attitude and momentum in the state to work with us. And so that is something that's at the table. But I think there's a piece of, and I'm not fixed on that word. I just want the realization to go through at the state that this doesn't take us out of crisis. We just averted a more severe crisis, but we are not still out of harm's way. We were able to keep a level from dropping. We did not increase any services. We're still going to be dependent on state police. We're still going to be dependent on reduced other services. So it does, and I agree, it doesn't need to just stay in keeping our public safe there, because there's other services we're not doing within our assessor's office, within our treasurer tax collector's office. But I saw this as a first draft, so any edits I'm most welcome to receiving.
Well, why don't we just be able to turn those into the office and get them to you, and you can make those adjustments. I do think that paragraph needs some massaging, and I would endorse the however as opposed to unfortunately.
Okay.
I think you can work unfortunately into, I think we want to stay not optimistic, but positive in the sense that we're making good progress, and we are that partner. We're proud to be in that situation. However, we're still not, I guess however is the right word, And what we would be able to do with those resources that we're currently allocating and have been to the district attorney's office is to match up what the citizens have said they'd love to allocate towards the jail and juvenile detention we're not able to meet that to the degree we would like by not providing 24-hour coverage, which is really the balance of how you've got a well-staffed jail. You need a well-staffed patrol, and the thing holding us back from being able to do that is really our allocation to the DA. And push comes to shove, nobody's doing, you know, patrols. State troopers are not doing the same function that our sheriff deputies
are doing. Are there any other counties that pay for their own DA? Were it?
Oh, they, no. You know, the district attorney's salary?
No, I mean to pay for the
office?
Yeah, their office.
Okay, so historically,
we're the only county one that pays that.
No, every county gets the district attorney's salary paid for, and many counties, most, add to that salary base out of county coffers because it's not competitive. His staff would all get paid more than he does. But traditionally and historically, once upon a time, the state actually paid for the deputy services as well. And then the biggest change, though, is we used to have county district courts and state courts, and in the 80s, we switched. And we as a county partnered with the state and said, we'll provide facilities, you provide the staff. So why district attorney didn't get to be a part of that, I don't know.
That should have been when that transition.
But even the Oregon District Attorneys Association is fighting for the state to provide more funding to district attorney services. What makes us different is that we are asking that the Department of Justice take over those services. They would support it if we were just asking for more money. But we've actually taken it a step further to say that the staff positions need to be turned over to the Department of Justice. In that paragraph about the however, leading into the patrol services, what statement had you said with that one? That keeping our public safe to the level we would like, something about, what was the next portion you said?
I don't know.
I can't remember either.
Regarding patrol services, we're just not able to meet our goal of 24-hour protection and meeting the kind of the balance with having an adequately staffed jail facility, but deficient patrol services. Something to that effect. And I said, you know, what we're allocating to the DA. All of those details are probably things that you want to be able to articulate in that one-on-one meeting with whoever she delegates, the governor delegates to meet with. Hopefully you can. I think picking a date, time certain, 2:00, I'll be at your office. To meet with your delegate, or you know, I'm here.
I think that's
important. Well, and also maybe even say we understand that this is a busy legislative session for you, you know, but this is a pressing issue for us.
Yeah.
Something to that effect.
All right, I am going to send this out via email to you both as an FYI that you can submit any other edits to staff to get back to me.
Okay. If you wanted to put an unfortunately somewhere, you can do it in the beginning of the last paragraph. Unfortunately, we have not received a reply to our previous letter.
I'm not sold on the word.
I'm just kidding.
I'm not kidding.
That's actually, you know, unfortunately, our governor, chief executive officer of the state, which we want to be able to rely on for stuff like this. We don't send letters like this every day. I think it would at least garner some sort of a reply.
All right.
Has Alec Campbell said anything? I mean, isn't Alex the governor's
correct at the local
delegate
level.
Down here?
Is he on this list to fire something off to him?
Yeah, I don't know.
Would it be helpful to send him a copy of the letter so he knows? What
it wouldn't be a bad idea, but yeah, this is just a draft letter.
Why is Ryan on this?
Ryan who?
Milkins.
Why is he or is he not?
Why is he?
This was the letter we had last time.
Okay. I just don't know that.
I just I just took our previous letter and edited it to...
Yeah, that's fine. Let's keep it consistent. I don't mind keeping Ryan in the loop on this. It's really... We're doing this really for his office to be adequately staffed and not be subject to...
He's in favor, I'm assuming. Yeah, he's in favor.
You know, I'm doing this whether he's in favor or not. He might not see the, you know, the long-term positive benefit to him not being in the crosshairs in 2 years again.
Not saying the state is any more stable than we are, but at least you wouldn't have to deal with local politics.
Well, when they're looking to allocate another judge to this region, they have resources. This is decimal dust for them. But it means real money. Like 1.3 is not decimal dust for us.
All right.
Okay, great. So the other item, if we've got this one kind of at least to the place where we can work on it, is the, well, let's make sure that you guys have everything before we get into the general discussion. Was there anything for you, Commissioner DeYoung?
Last evening I went to Ron Smith's Elon Solutions.
Yep.
It was quite interesting, first off. You know, I kind of went with reservation as to whether or not I was going to be the pinata.
Yeah.
At the party. Absolutely nothing like that whatsoever.
Oh, good.
They all recognized, when he introduced me to the crowd of, that's probably 10 or 12 people, they're not very many, they all clapped. Then a commissioner showed up, and they all had really good comments. And
good.
They were all very thankful.
Positive.
That the levy passed.
Okay.
It had nothing to do with any kind of witch hunt at all. It did. I want to talk to Commissioner Leaf up in Douglas County, because the speaker was from Douglas County.
Yeah.
And talking about Apache County down in Mexico, Arizona,
yes.
And the five counties surrounding that have done, that have basically called the shot for the federal government, and it has to come from the Board of County Commissioners. I'm going to look into it even farther, but there's a gentleman named Boyd Shamley, I think it is his name, mm-hmm. And he does a seminar, two-day, eight hours of peace seminar. Gary's been to that.
I have too.
Commissioner Leaf, have you been to it?
I heard him speak last summer.
But did you go to the full thing?
No, the speaker that was there last night at Ron's event was the same speaker at this event in Cottage Grove last year. And
MoMA?
Yeah. She was who organized it last year, and he was there speaking, and they also had a panel of different folks. One of the Lane County Commissioners was there, and different groups from the coast, and so I heard his presentation, and I received his email of the full presentation, and it is something that I followed up to look into as possibilities, but I have not sat through 2 days of stuff with him.
There were some things in there that I thought were okay, but there's also a couple of real holes in the operation of what they want to do that says that they're going way back to where the Constitution says the federal government can't own land and that they have to dispose of it. And I raised my hand and I said, how do you dispose of federal land at this point in time? Do you dispose of our federal land in Oregon by selling it to the Chinese because they're after the resources? Because then you could make that case that they could sell it to anybody. It doesn't have to be, you're assuming that they're going to give it to the county or give it to the state. And I said, I wouldn't make that assumption lightly. So that was something that I didn't think they could answer, other than there would be a bunch of pushback. But
well,
I will call.
And the state doesn't necessarily want it. I mean, some of those lands that, when we've had this conversation at the state level and public lands committee, there's a lot of lands that just cost a bunch of money. And they don't actually generate any revenue. So
no,
let's have everybody pay for it as opposed to just the state of Oregon and our taxpayers. So there's an argument against sometimes. But
there is, and
we're not any more, you know, the state laws are not any more conducive to mining or timber production being in the state's hands. Look, they're selling the state, you know, Elliott State Forest. It's one of the most productive timberlands in the world. And they can't make any money off it. What makes us think it's any better in the state's hands?
Right.
So I don't know.
So there was a lot of, but it was only a 2-hour presentation. Loma, she could sharpen her skills a little bit. But anyway, I'm going to call Commissioner Lee, see what his opinion was.
She's not always real positive on her comments on Facebook and stuff. Can be pretty pointed and challenging.
But anyway, I was just happy to see that it didn't get.
Yeah.
That it was not a witch hunt in any way, shape, or form. Everybody in the room thought the commissioners were going in the right direction.
Well, I don't mind learning more about, but the coordination stuff, it's really challenging. You know, we've been leaning into it as much as some others. I know Baker County's doing quite a bit, and we really need to form a coordination committee and have that started. So I need to work on that. I've got two versions of their coordination plan committee structure and stuff and their bylaws and all of that, and I need to put those kind of two together and do the stuff that makes sense for us and then get that before you guys. So
sounds good.
We will do that.
That's all I have.
Okay, Commissioner Morgan.
I wanted to not make any assumptions about the Blue Zone process, but as liaison with public health, and I was contacted by the group in town that's kind of coordinating the Blue Zone as a...
What is a Blue Zone?
A Blue Zone is a healthy community, essentially. There was a study done a while back of communities worldwide that have a lot of centurions, people who live over 100. And what did those communities have in common as far as lifestyle, practice, different things? And so in turn, they took that, what they studied, and now they've gone into different communities to enable those communities to put some things in practice to help them be healthy communities. Grants Pass applied to be a Blue Zone. Roseburg and the Dalles were chosen this year. Klamath County, it's a three-year process where they come into community, help the community put some things in place and policies and such to move forward, and the community takes it on and goes from there.
Cost?
None to the county. Private sector has taken on the cost as sponsorship between Asante All Care and Primary Health. I want to say the Dalles said they put $7,000 or $8,000 into this year, and they said they won't in the next couple of years. I haven't talked to Douglas County about their costs, but Klamath County's 2 years into it. The Fords offered some suggestions that the school zones have implemented, and that is something I've taken to the Klamath County Commissioners, and they said that they'll talk to their school board about it, because that's not something that, as far as confiscating kids' lunches and different stuff, so they would deal with that. But anyhow, it's private sector driven, it's something I've kind of just taken on dealing with a couple of the commissioners. Kelly Minnie Morris is the one in Klamath County, Commissioner Freeman in Douglas County right now, and then also Commissioner Steve Kramer with Wasco County. And so we were going to meet up in Salem when we're there for AOC in June and just kind of touch base and be a resource to each other. But I don't want to assume that I should be the point person on this without you guys' weighing in on it.
It's not going to be me.
Okay, then I don't mind going forward, and I have a feeling you don't mind me doing it either.
I don't mind you doing anything you want here.
Okay, well, I
did not say that, so you don't have a quorum of the board. Well, actually, if you approve you're doing anything
so
you want.
You and I both just said I can do anything I want.
Anything you want. Jeez.
Thank you. Gosh, that was awesome.
Oh, man. Freshman. I just always having fun.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that I...
No, I appreciate
did
that,
not but. Move forward with taking part without the full board's acknowledgement.
I just always get really curious when another program comes on board and costs somebody money. It always costs somebody money.
It's expensive.
Looking at County College, at the end of County College, I'm going to want a list of every program we heard about at the state level. And it's going to be, and the cost involved with every one of those programs. And I'm going to go back to what Todd Nash is. It looks to me like you could just divide that money you've got in your budget 31 ways and give us each $26 million. But when it becomes a program, it is the administrative cost of a program far outreaches its benefit of what it actually gets down to the people. And that's where I say, well, we want to become, well, we're going to Tree City USA. Well, then all of a sudden we have to develop a code with tree canopy requirement. That costs somebody something somewhere in the private sector. And that's where I get concerned.
So this is a cost to the private sector. This is an involvement, just the participation.
But it's
industry committed to $300,000 to $400,000 a year that they would fund, It's a very big cost in our community, but it was also not government paying that.
Right. It's just that everybody, you know, for instance, they, well, we want to do something about the homeless, so the government's going to build all new houses for the homeless. That means that I'm building houses for the homeless, and I won't do that.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. When you have a program, it usually comes back to my wallet, and there's a lot of stuff that I disagree with, but I'm forced to pay because it went through the program side. And I'm just, after seeing all the programs at County College, week in and week out, I get real concerned that the size of our government is so big, and if Governor Brown wants to cut 15% out of her budget, then she should cut out 15% of the programs just across the board. Be done with it. Own personal opinion.
Okay.
Anything else?
Yes. We received an email from AOC asking for our county to write a letter encouraging support of Senate Bill 327 remaining as it is, which is the recreational immunity bill that's trying to fix a caveat. There's a push to kind of change it towards a gross negligent program, which would still keep employees liable and have to defend lawsuits, which could be very costly.
Employees, which means us. I'll send a letter with the board's endorsement today, if you don't mind, as Parks liaison.
I would support you doing that as liaison.
Great. I'll do it today.
And so I just want to make sure that we follow up with that.
It'll be short. Support 327 in its current form.
So the last one is, I still get notifications of training statewide. And one of the trainings that is coming up is a FEMA management, public information, and all hazards incidents. I thought that would be something, since we do not have a public information officer,
Absolutely. That
it would be appropriate for one of us to attend. It does say that it should be somebody who has experience with incident command system and previous independent studies of IS 100 and 200. I'm certified in both those levels. I'm interested in going, but I also did not want to... I wanted to throw this out there with you guys to see, because it's public information and all.
Well, hazards. I think in your, you know, the beginning of your tenure, I think it would be appropriate, given the duration of time that I might be around and the experience that I've gone through 6 fire seasons and been on the TV and done all that stuff. I don't believe I've ever made an error, and I don't anticipate one coming forward in the future. What I say,
well, that wasn't one, but it was a mistake. You didn't actually.
Not in my duties as a public information officer for the county or the board. What I say is usually very clear and short and sweet.
A spokesperson.
It's the liaison. It's the person who's on duty. So we're all of you know, if the fire happens and she's on vacation, it's you, Commissioner DeYoung, when that mic gets in your face. And you're not going to err. You're going to say, look, we've got experts monitoring this situation. Evacuations will be done on a as-needed basis, and those are coordinated through our sheriff's office and search and rescue.
Yeah.
I feel like you're going to just say what's necessary and don't say, everybody needs to panic and run and scream
run
and shout.
Run to the hills.
Yeah.
What are you doing talking to me? I'm out of here.
Yeah. If I'm not here, you shouldn't be either. Or you know, you're going to be fine. But I think that there are things that we could do better. That, you know, that's the least common denominator. I think that the training that you're going to get is going to be probably pretty helpful for telling us what we're not doing and we should be doing.
Okay. Yeah. Then I will attend.
Sounds good. It's in state.
It is in state. It is Benton County though, but it is in state.
Great. Sounds good. The item that we had at general discussion this afternoon is the Collaborative Economic Development Committee selection. We have a very limited number of applicants so far, but I think we got a couple of good ones. What I'm looking to do is that we would evaluate those, and rather than rating those that are, we have specific opportunities to serve on this committee that are delineated for different things. None of these people have actually, I believe, expressed interest in a specific position or representing, but there's like Mr. Camp could very well be a representative for the Illinois Valley, like we have on the list.
He's also on the Airports Advisory Committee, so he could also fill the role of airports and technology.
Sure, right? So there's multiple for him. But I figured what we may want to do is, well, what do we want to do? Do we want to have interviews with these people? Because there's a couple that I don't know very well.
Okay.
And
there's 4 that I would gladly have on the committee. There's a 5th that may be helpful. There's a sixth that I have great concern about.
Okay.
What I did is I saw this list in the packets, and I'm actually very familiar with all of the applicants.
Okay.
And strengths and weaknesses and such.
I'm not familiar with Judy. I'd say that one out front.
She's probably the one that... She's the one that I said I'm hesitant on or curious. She has a background that could be helpful, but she also could be very time intensive with answering questions and asking for information, which may not necessarily be most helpful on the group to have that.
Well, I do expect that this committee would establish like subcommittees of people that need to be working on a specific project, and it doesn't necessarily need to be the committee members themselves. So there might be an opportunity to serve in addition to. I think maybe what we should do is highlight the ones that we'd like to talk to. You say you're familiar with all of them.
Very much so.
The other thing that I wanted to mention is that I don't think we should feel obligated that we have to fill the full committee on day one.
Okay.
I think that we could have positions open and keep soliciting for membership over time. I would want to get this staffed with the right people.
Yeah.
Mr. Bowen, as an applicant, being a city employee or a contractor, he's not a city employee, he's a contractor with the city, seems a little strange. Like, he's going to be in the room advising from a staff perspective.
He's also the county tourism, what is the correct terminology? From a travel Oregon perspective, we have regional...
He's a representative?
Regional... designees, mm-hmm. and he is the designee for Josephine County and Travel Grants Pass. So I agree that having him at the table is
he's going to be at the table.
But it's curious about that piece there. But otherwise, yes. What I did is I took a list and I kind of wrote who I thought could fill the different positions.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Camp is on our airports advisory board for Illinois Valley. He also is in a
technology.
He's also technology. He's considered an expert on cybersecurity and speaks around the world frequently on those topics.
Where did you put him?
I put him under airports. Mr. Hawkins can also fit towards technology. He's somebody who has extensive experience with getting efficiencies in place with municipalities and counties in California with savings and technology software deployment, and I would welcome the experience that he has. Mr. Duarte, I think the perspective of the businesses that he's been a part of and planning, he's in real estate and stuff like that, I believe that he would be an asset to the team. And obviously, Mr. Bowen, with the tourism, he needs to be at the table one way or the other.
So maybe he fills that role.
So I put him as tourism. I put Mr. Duarte as the natural resources and agricultural.
Who?
Mr. Duarte. My concern with the remaining applicant is told me that he disagrees with the county's use of grants and federal grants and beholden to the state. We've already seen what the impact to the county is when we've had a commissioner who is denied any grants, where it almost put us in harm's way with the airports losing status with the FAA and funding, and is somebody who is critical of the commissioners almost weekly on Facebook. I don't believe that's somebody who is going to be beneficial to our committee.
Can't endorse him on that.
No.
I have a question. Is the county putting together an economic development committee? And the city's putting together an economic development committee, and then together they have one?
No, we submit five people. They submit five people.
Okay, so these
Chamber
will be submitted along with theirs.
To form the one committee.
To form the one committee. Okay, that's where
I'm going. Yeah, I don't see these people meeting on their own ever.
No.
Okay, well, that's what I was wondering, because I knew we were supposed to be in conjunction working for once in conjunction with the city of Grants Pass, but yet we're doing our
thing. We're only
thing.
Populating our perspective. These are all our agreed upon of the big structures on the next page.
Let me see. I have
there's a page in there, I think, that Terry provided. It's got the whole
membership, so.
County appointments will special cause cases. Okay. After resource and agriculture, who's that?
I'm going to recommend that Duarte fill the member-at-large position, and we leave the natural resources and agriculture open.
Empty. I can support that.
Tourism on John Bowen.
And who's
Cameron.
Doing natural resources and agriculture?
We're going to leave that
open for now until we get another applicant.
Tourism is Bowen. Transportation airports is
Cameron.
Cameron. And technology is Brian Hawkins.
Yeah.
Ford. I would support that.
I like Brian. Will be good at that.
Okay. So we're going to
And Duarte is member
Judy's
of
Judy's not out, and or Judy's out, and Bob's out.
Four,
I think four right now, and that's.
I would like to sit down with Judy.
Okay.
I don't believe I've met her.
Interesting person. I've met her at a couple of. She hosted a couple of the things for chair. Yep.
I just like to sit down with her, see if we couldn't.
Yeah. Well, the city had a position for finance.
If I do know her, I don't.
I don't know her background or anything, but she's very involved.
Okay.
So.
Absolutely. Her background was finance, I believe, if I remember correct. But
her resume is there.
And let's see.
Yeah, CPA.
The other piece.
Business manager. GP.
So RCC gets a member.
We need to ask them for their delegates, and I'll do that.
Okay.
I'll just reach out to them and suggest that they appoint a delegate to this committee.
And then I know that
CJRCC and Chamber.
Yep.
Those are the three I think we need to consider. Am I right? I'm doing it off memory.
That is.
Good. I'll reach out to the Chamber and RCC. Cape Junction.
Natural resources and agriculture, that's...
Lands and farming.
Well, for the first little while, I'll be the liaison as the liaison to community development, and I fulfill both of those. There's from a forestry perspective, and knowing that industry and agriculture was my major in college, I'm fairly up to speed.
You kind of have some ranching background.
A little bit. So I can cover that portion. Honestly, I'd like to see somebody in a... dynamic agriculture, a new developing, not necessarily the marijuana industry, because I think that committee that you're putting together is going to satisfy that opportunity for them to be included. I'm looking for a niche market of probably like the seed crop industry, which is really growing, herbs, or industrial hemp is probably going to have a need.
Representative Wilson spoke on that this morning as well, the industrial hemp.
Yeah. I'm kind of thinking of Cliff Thomason might be a good, or Kit Doyle, somewhere in that version, maybe not them, because they're pretty busy, but somebody with an interest in that. I think that there's a growing industrial hemp
community. I think it would be somebody who would be economy-minded and looking for new opportunities.
Yeah, and vertically integrated, so it's not just the production side of things of agriculture, the processing, and all of that. So we'll... Well, then maybe we made those appointments, if that's okay with you guys.
Sure.
So we'll move that list forward.
Should we keep on consent calendar?
Sure.
And then continue to advertise for the natural resources at
the session. Yep. Open till filled. Well, look at that. Better than I could have hoped. Anything else we had?
I bet I can remember.
We work on this. My comments for the draft CWPP are due. Community Wildfire Protection Plan are due this Friday. It's about a 300-page document with all of the illustrations, tables, references, all that stuff. And otherwise, it's going to be in the home stretch. We will have it done by the end of June and approved, which is when we extended the contract. It was supposed to be at the end of May, and we just were not going to make that. I wasn't going to make it, so but I will get it done. Then that's pretty much it. So anything further? Seeing none, we're adjourned at, nice to see an electronic clock, 11:24.